I walk over to the window, gazing down at Dubai, a sense of dissonance finding me as I reflect on the last few days. Think about the wound below his eyes, the way he seemed dead set on using my body often in the past few days, and the last minute holiday.
Be the blood of the Cosa Nostra.
Glancing back at Clay's sisters-in-law, I watch them move around the suite, positioning themselves on the sofa where they wait. Are they waiting for me to do something? Say something? What brought them to this room? To me? At first thought, it was a babysitting mission. The whole ensure I eat, behave even. But now I'm not so convinced that's the whole picture. Clay told me last night, I admit to them, wishing I had more information to offer as uncertainty thickens the air between them as they look at me with intent. Shoshana sighs angrily, focusing now on cooing her son to sleep, a visual declaration to deter questions. So I turn to Cassidy, asking, did you two know that they were going to leave early this morning? Only last night, Cassidy confirms. Max told me he was going to get revenge. She pauses, hesitation holding her tongue while pity softens her gaze on mine. Are you okay with what's happening? I'm not sure what she means. About my dad's involvement, I think. Like, am I entirely on their side? The urge to stand by Clay's decisions seems to solidify inside my spine. Needing them to see my irrefutable loyalty, I simply say, yes. She swallows hard, uncertain. Has Clay explained everything to you? About my dad? Yes. And what he did to me? The attack? How he tried to have my brother killed. I know all of it. She looks down at her fingernails as she peels a film of pink from the surface, saying, Max apologized to me, you know, for it taking so long. Like I care, like it's been on my mind all these years. That was him projecting his own guilt and regret on me, not mine. God, he was in so much pain last night. Her voice wobbles, and she bounces her eyes to her daughter, who is now building a three-wall cubby with my emotional support pillows. Cassidy looks back at me. I don't want them to kill your dad, Fawn. Of course I don't know him, I state straight away, defensive and wishing I wasn't, but I need them to know who I stand beside. I'm not a victim here, not collateral damage. I don't want them to lump me in that camp. I'm the same as them. When Max needs to do something, Cassidy trails off, muttering to herself through a small nod. I need to let him do it. She peers her sad hazel eyes up at me. He carries so much inside, so much weight. He has all these contradictory pieces, you know? He's so sweet, so gentle. My big, gentle menace. And then he's so cold and hard. I don't pretend to understand, but I support him and whatever he feels he needs to do. Stopping a man like Max Butcher from doing what he feels is right would be like wrapping his heart in chains. I could never do it. It's part of him, and I love and accept all his parts. She suddenly gazes at Shoshana, who has relaxed her shoulders as if the anger is no longer twisting her muscles tight. We don't need to understand them, Shosh. Shoshana seems pained as she says, Bronson is too fragile to do this alone. He needs me. He knew I'd fight him on this. He knew I'd want to go, to help. I can help. I'm a doctor, for God's sake. What if they need me? What if he needs me? She looks down at Stone, then inhales angrily and exhales hard, enforcing calm. She lowers her voice. The crazy son of a bitch didn't even tell me. My heart hurts. He just left? Her expression softens, letting her guard slip. I should have known. Last night when he got back, he had this look in his eyes. They were so green. And when they're green, well, crazy happens. I thought it was a moment. He has them sometimes. After everything he's seen, done, been through with that cunt Victoria, it's like there are days that the darkness consumes him, circles him, and he needs me to hold him for hours sometimes, like a child. My 6'5", tattooed, bearded man-child. God, I love him so much. She covers her mouth to smother a sob, then forces it away. I was wrong. It was a lot more than a moment. Then I found a single rose and a note on the dresser this morning. What did the note say? Cassidy asks. She smiles tightly and gazes down at her sleeping babe, her amber irises swimming in tears now. It said, "Think about my boy." Cassidy exhales hard. That's a good note. A tear drops from Shoshana's eye, her hand wiping at the unwelcome little bead as it trails down her cheek. Clay's words float back to me with her sorrow.
Let me finish this for my brothers, for you, for our son.
Bronson and Shoshana's son, Stone, is the reason he left and the reason she can't, just like Clay's and mine. I get it. Immediately my hand cups my lower abdomen, praying there is life beneath my palm. The heir to an empire, a prince, a little boy I will give sweetness and magic to. Wait, what did she say? Been through with that cunt Victoria. Their mum. What has he been through with his mum? I breathe the question out, and both girls suddenly still. You just said Victoria. That's their mum, right? I've wondered for a while what her deal is. Shoshana answers. She's a bitch. My brows pinch and I think about the way she interacted with me. I didn't understand it. Or her. Neglectful or something else. She seemed super nice to Clay the one time I met her. And she was, I don't know, pleasant-ish to me. Pleasant-ish? Shoshana drawls. She wasn't pleasant. Trust me. And she isn't nice to Clay. She's a sycophant with Clay because he's the don of the damn Cosa Nostra. Her perfect, fearless heir to this dynasty. I don't know what sycophant means, but placed in context, I imagine it means she's a brown noser. I don't argue with her. She does seem cold. Believe us, Cassidy insists. She's not a good person.
Damn it, Xander!
A man barks, the words freezing us, our gazes now darting to the closed double doors as our answers lie beyond them. Shoshana leaps to her feet like a mother who heard her own son's name screamed. She rushes over to the door and swings it open to reveal the soldiers darting through the corridors, throwing orders to one another. Something is going down. Is Clay injured? Did the plane go down? What happened, Carter? Shoshana asks, gripping the arm of the biggest man I think I have ever seen. He twists to acknowledge her, unveiling his face from the shadows. I suck a breath in. His skin is curled and cavernous, his expression taut with the kind of anger only dread can provoke.
Damn that boy. I should have known,
he says to Shoshana.
He's gone. He bloody slipped us.
I move towards them. What do you mean? Carter steps inside at my utterance, stopping before me as a soldier would his commanding officer, with a respectful and orderly manner. It throws me a little.
My queen. Miss Harlow.
He looks reluctant as he says,
he slipped us. We don't have eyes on him.
He knows my name. I'm not Clay's dirty little secret. Xander, Shoshana breathes, the word choppy with concern. What is he hoping to achieve? To go back? Cassidy gasps. You have to find him, Carter.
We'll search the city, Mrs. Butcher,
he says over my shoulder to Cassidy in a far more familiar way. Her henchman Jeeves, I think.
Carter, I need a juice boxy, Kelly says to him from her pillow fort, either oblivious or immune to the commotion.
I'll get you one in a minute, Cassidy says. Her tone is effortlessly soothing and motherly. I don't know how she does that. My mom kept everything bubbling shallow. Anger, delirium, despair. I experienced them all. Carter trains his gaze to me, and where I usually experience the shift of the patronizing stare from men like him, he's different with me. He considers me as though I'm somehow taller than his 7-foot goon self.
This is on me. I should have known. I've watched over that boy for his entire life. This is exactly like him. I should have.
No. Craning my neck to see him better, I realize on a closer look that he isn't as monstrous as I first thought. The skin on his face is smooth like melted wax, glistening and silvery like the moon. He is quite beautiful, really, in a tragic way. It's not your fault, I confirm. Has Clay been contacted? He shakes his chin stiffly.
We only just realized he wasn't in his suite seconds ago. I don't know how long for. We had men outside the entire time.
I nod. Call Clay immediately.
Yes, Miss Harlow.
Their queen.
Chapter 20. Clay. It's no more than 2 hours into our flight when my phone rings, luring me from my state of restless sleep, from the nightmarish reverie of Bronson tied to that damn chair, of Max demanding the Cosa Nostra give him Dustin's head, of my little dear screaming for me to punish her, protect her, stay with her. When I'm beside her, below that damn dreamcatcher, my vicious memories seem to pardon me. Her ideals are a ridiculous comfort, and her soft body settles my pulsing heart, blanking my mind, sleep a quiet state. Without her, I'm pulled from this half-dream condition and sit up. Retrieving my phone, I frown at a notification in my inbox from an unknown number, the beginning of said message visible. I have the little. Ignoring the ring, the incoming call from Carter, as it beckons me to answer it, glued to the message. Immediately stilled, ice slides through me. My world blurs around the edges when I open it. It reads, I have the little butcher. All I can hear is my heart between my ears, not the humming of the plane or the engine, only a deep, thundering drum of hatred in my mind. Carter continues to call, but I decline and instead dial the unknown number. Clay Butcher. Dustin's deep voice rumbles through the phone, his delight hitting my ears like a blade, cutting through ice. It's been many years. Talk. I
lock my teeth around the word, staring dead ahead, unable to form further conversation while also appearing in a state of calm, indifferent, impartial. That's the power stance, and I'm balancing on the cusp of my control. Don't feel. I hiss the rage through my teeth, and Bronson and Max both become alert to my change in demeanor. They watch me closely, and I stare ahead with rage, a red blanket over my focus. He goes on. The security you have in Dubai is impeccable. I applaud you. I'm, of course, disappointed you didn't seek a safe house in Indonesia. I would have been happy to see you there. But you knew better. Vinny gave that away. That was a pity. I was fond of him. Talk. You see, I picked your little brother up trying to get back to the district on a commercial flight. He's slippery, isn't he? A little too clever, even for you. Even for Malik. Even for dozens of your soldiers. His chortles continue, stoking the fire inside me. The only way we caught on to him was because we saw a young man wearing Malik's hotel staff uniform with the remains of a boxing match across his face. Swollen eye, split lip. On closer inspection, blue butcher eyes. It was the little legend, for sure. He pauses on another condescending huff of amusement, and my knuckles run cold, losing blood as I fist the phone. He always was the invisible butcher, wasn't he? The forgettable one. I bite back words, using my silence to speak volumes as nothing productive can come from the turmoil, heating my butcher head to an inferno. Okay then, Clay. Let me make this clear. It's a simple one. Bring me my daughter, and I'll trade you your little brother. 72 hours. That'll give you time. Meet me out past the docks. There is an old campground. The fire circles it, but for one entrance in and one out. Be there. Come alone, but with your brothers, and bring my daughter with my unborn grandson. In return, I'll give you an unharmed little butcher. But if you don't, if you play me... He pauses, and my eyes mist over with red dots of rage. I'll pluck your little brother's clever brain out through his nostrils while he blinks up at me. The phone call dies, and my hollow stare crosses the plain, meeting the dark gazes of my brothers. Their sense of danger fine-tuned to the discomfort in my usually unaffected manner, to the shaking of my rage-filled body. I've failed. Them.
Chapter 21. Fawn. No one speaks on the flight back to the district, to the city with so many secrets. The plane is a droning vessel of grief-stricken silence. I want to curl into a ball and sob, want to moan at the possibility of our loss. I want Clay. My mind is drowning in blame. Xander. He's gone. Taken. I dart my gaze to Cassidy, who is staring heartbrokenly out of the plane's port-like window while an exhausted little Kelly lies in her lap. Cassidy combs her daughter's golden hair with her fingers. Then I look at Shoshana. She's rocking the bassinet in front of her with her red sneakers. Easily removable footwear, while punching buttons on her phone, concentration furrowing her brows. What must they think of me? Sorry. Sorry. It's a word I don't say often anymore because Clay despises the way it slips from me unbidden. But today, I am to blame. I'm so sorry. God, I'm so sorry, Clay. He was so busy protecting me. He'll regret that one day. Regret me. When we land, there is a car waiting for each of us, and I separate from Cassidy and Shoshana without a goodbye. Striding away from them with hardly an upwards glance, I'm unable to bear their feigned expressions that hide screams of accusation. My presence is like a nail in Xander's coffin. Does my dad want me? It was meant to be me. Xander. He was the one who taught me good things come in three. Where the hell are his? I try to breathe, to fight the boiling heat in my eyes. As I slide into the back seat with HJ, the door closes on us. Twisting my hair around my finger, I swallow around the rising bile in my throat. I'm sick with grief that knots and twists inside me, that renders guilt and self-blame to my very marrow, to my core, to the parts of me that wanted to believe in Xander's advice. There is no sequence of good things, Xander. Only bad. This is number one. Xander, number one. Gazing out of the window at this city, I watch the blissfully ignorant citizens filter the walkways of Connolly under the early morning sun. The separation between me and them, a thin pane of tinted glass, a soundproof and bulletproof partition, and knowledge. At the house, I climb out of the car. Under the constant cover of guards, I rush inside, kneading clay so I can ask, what now? Are they still taking the compound? Are they waiting? What did my dad say he wanted? I'm halted by Clay's voice, the sound of him so in control easing me slightly, needing that infallible assurance he is going to take care of this. He's going to get Xander back. He'll fix everything. Within the room, I hear another voice, too. His brother's. I can't tell which one. I wander slowly to the closed door of Clay's office, leaning my shoulder against the wood and bating my breath. But soon, Carter and HJ appear beside me, and I glance guiltily at my feet, having been caught eavesdropping. Carter only indicates for me to slide to the side so he can enter, while HJ stands across the room, eyeing me.
He knows you are home, Miss Harlow. No need to hide.
Carter advises as he walks into the office. Even so, I tuck behind the wall until the door closes again. Then I ignore HJ's uncertain stare and press my ear to the wood.
Good. Carter is here.
Clay's voice nestles into my soul.
Is everyone back safely and where they should be? Yes, boss. Let's get this sorted out. I'll drive into the campsite alone, and Carter will bring Max, Bronson, and our men in through the flames behind Dustin's flank. Undoubtedly, he'll have the stockyard members there, but they'll be on vehicles. You'll be on foot.
Through the flames? A voice that I think belongs to Bronson says,
Gonna get myself a new bike on the way out, but it's all lit up in red. How do you know where our yellow brick road is? The marked red is heat, smoke mostly. But I can get you in at this burnout site here. There's an old service road connected to it that runs around the campground. The trees were cleared for the pipes. It should have created a narrow fire break through the inferno. Not visible from above. Should have.
Bronson asks in a quiet, unnerving way.
Can't have my beautiful brothers burning their faces now. We need to be sure. Nothing is for certain with fires, boss.
Carter's voice carries regret.
But I've seen worse than this fire. I was a smoke jumper for 2 decades before your father hired me. I'm confident I can get you in and out. We won't bump into any firefighters out there, then. We don't want innocent eyes around us. The fire is contained,
Clay states, and his voice still catches my breath every time I hear it.
They have no need to be out there. No resources to put it out. It's too large. State services are letting it run its course, and it'll go out by itself come the wet season. I have all the roads blocked off. Services are at the head near homes, nowhere near the campsite. He's a clever son of a butcher, isn't he?
Bronson states, humor laced in his voice that doesn't seem genuine. They are all on edge.
And Dustin won't see you coming.
Clay states, back to business, assertive and systematic.
You will enter from behind the campsite. Wait for my signal. Take the bikers out. If anything happens, if we don't come back, Aurora will organize a hunting party. We bring the girl.
Someone states, his voice already tight and uneven with sentiment. Me? I'm going...
No, Max.
Clay dismisses.
We don't. We can protect her.
Max grounds out.
But the girl needs to fawn.
Clay corrects smoothly.
And I said no. If Dustin asks to see her and you don't have her, he'll put a bullet straight into Xander's head.
He's right. We can't risk it. I can't risk it.
This isn't about Fawn.
Clay's foregrounding voice leaves no room for emotion.
He doesn't care about her enough to risk his own life. This is about Xander!
Max snaps, and tears slide down my cheeks, followed quickly by more. They are painful now, after having shed so many over the last 24 hours. They leak in thick, hot rivulets down my face. Max is right. Please listen to him, Clay.
This is an execution. This is about us.
Clay states, with that cool indifference that hides his true intensity. I need him to think about Xander now. Think about his brothers.
No.
Max repeats softly, hoarse, making me shiver.
You're angry, tired. Take a moment. No. Damn you, Max.
Clay hisses, his temper simmering in that sound.
I will not hand over Fawn. This conversation. We're your brothers!
Max's voice breaks, and the talons of guilt circle my throat, tightening around the column as I listen to the Butcher brothers turn on one another. For me. Because of me. Max bites out.
He's your little brother. Would you trade Cassidy? Think about what you are asking of me.
Clay says, a lethal dare stalking his words. His tone buckles my knees, forcing me to slide down the door until I hit the floor and wrap my arms protectively around my legs. You can't choose me, sir. Not over them.
And what about Xander? What about Bronson?
Max's voice rises with each forced word.
The one you made do all the dirty work. What about when we were just children?
Max growls, straining to continue, as though he is fighting with honesty.
Damn it! We needed our big brother. What about then?
He laughs contemptuously, bringing anger to the forefront to veil the honest declaration that a man like Max Butcher needed his big brother.
I don't know why I'm surprised by this. I thought maybe you'd changed without Jimmy holding your strings, but I see I was wrong. You're still the same self-important prick you were when we were children. Max.
Bronson says his name so quietly it could be a ghost moving through the room. Clay reasons.
I will get him out. He'll kill Xander.
Max states coldly, all his emotions smothered into bitter-ridden detachment.
He'll kill him because he can, and I'll kill you because I can't stand to share your fucking air.
Seconds later, the door slams into my spine, sliding me across the floor. Wincing, I climb to my feet as Max's formidable body appears in the jam. He steals when he notices me, nothing but venom in his assessing grey eyes. Then he strides away, his body taking him quickly from the thing he despises, me. I exhale hard, shaken to my core by his hatred. It looks familiar, the disdain. I look so becoming I'm prickly and self-conscious like the old fawn again. A Harlow, not a Nerik, and definitely not a butcher. My fingers meet the cool surface of the monarch butterfly pendant hanging around my neck. I brush my fingertips over it. My dad can't hurt me. No one can hurt me except Clay. Nothing will hurt more than to see my everything's eyes flash with that familiar contempt-filled look. Needing to see his eyes. See reassurance. See love. With my breath uneven and forced, I walk on hesitant legs to the opening and stand there unnoticed. No. Ignored. Bronson has his shoulder against the wall, so motionless he could be a sculpture as he stares at Clay while lost within his own green gaze. He's a little frightening like this. And Luca is sat, silent, his eyes glazed over as though he is staring at something far in the distance. I shift my sight across from him to the other side of the desk where I once watched footage of my own assault. Carter is conversing with his boss, earning himself all of Clay's attention. Clay rubs his jaw in contemplation, but he's glacial in every inch of his powerful suited body. His eyes are glued to the monitor ahead. He's getting the job in order. Dutifully, without emotions. So very Clay Butcher. And he doesn't look up. Not once, but he knows I'm here. He always does. My stomach twists. He's ignoring me on purpose. Maybe he knows he is making the wrong decision but simply can't bring himself to change it. Maybe he's so heavily wrapped in the promises that binds him to me. To protect me. To keep me. To choose me.
I'll always choose to protect you, little dear.
That he can't see what needs to happen. I gaze at him, adrift for a moment in his beauty, the tense lines of his sharp jaw, the gravity of his blue eyes. He's spectacular. I was half right. Belonging to him is the sweetest of existences, but being loved by this man, I sigh. It's like starting anew with wings. My eyes well up. I can't accept his choice. God, I wanted Benji to choose me, my mum too, anyone, but I can't accept his choice, not when it's at his own expense and not at Xander's. It's a cruel fucking joke. But I'd rather lose him, lose myself, lose this whole wonderful life than have him lose Xander and blame himself. He already carries enough guilt. I can't allow it. I'd rather be a sweet memory in his mind, a sweet girl who he was very fond of once, who he loved. I smile at that. I won't allow him to endure Xander's death. Won't let it start another sequence of bad things. Not this time. Moving away from the door, I find myself walking in the direction Max disappeared, henchman Jeeves as my shadow. Chapter 22. Fawn. I grip the corner of the doorframe, peering around the wall to see the back of Max's large, tense shoulders. The room, an office of sorts, is furnished but staged in a way that suggests it doesn't get used. I've never been in there before. Max is sitting, leaning forward on his knees, staring at a glass of whiskey on the table in front of him. I wonder if he's crying. Does Max Butcher cry? I wouldn't know. There is sadness in this room, that's for sure. It's chilling. It sweeps around me like a current across a harsh plain, the kind that precedes snow and then a frozen wintry grave. It's lonely, like he keeps it to himself. I remember something Cassidy said about him. Stopping a man like Max Butcher from doing what he feels is right would be like wrapping his heart in chains. I sigh, thinking about how well Cassidy understands Max, maybe more than he understands himself. I imagine Clay's emotional state right now. The entire city is his responsibility, his brother and me. How does he not crumble beneath his duties?
Trust me, little dear.
Maybe he is crumbling. Maybe I would have seen the splintering of his resolve if he had looked at me moments ago. He doesn't see it yet, but if something happens to Xander, he'll never forgive himself. I need to protect him from this mistake. I need to be at the campsite. I need to go with Max, and I need to get HJ off my damn heels. Taking a big breath in, I close the door. Heading to the lounge area, I see the playpen. Inside, my kitten tumbles with a ball of wool, flipping around with it, the static of the wool caught in her needle-like claws. I pick her and the wool up, hold her to my face, and fight back tears. I whisper, "I'm sorry I can't play with you today." Then I put her back in the pen, and with my shadow, HJ, making a poor effort to give me a wide berth, I search the halls. As I pass a few guards, I nod at them, trying to act as natural as possible, but failing miserably as I never nod at them. Mostly, I barely notice them. Smooth. Today they are everywhere. Thankfully, I see Jasmine flitting around the halls. "Hey," I say, grabbing her elbow and tugging her in for a completely unlike me cuddle. "Can you do me a favor?" I whisper in her ear, holding her tightly so she can't push me away. She lifts her arms, but they are uncertain as they return my embrace with loose pressure. "That depends entirely on what you're about to say. I need you to get me your hoodie and then pretend we are talking about private things because I'm upset, because there is a lot going on, and I'll tell you everything later, but I need to sneak out the staff exit." "No." "Please? No, Fawn. It's important," I whisper cry, burying my face in her hair a little to muffle the words. "I just want to talk to Max. He's upset and I don't think he'll talk to me if he thinks H. Bolton is listening." I hate myself for this, but I need her to do this. So I manipulate the side of her who pretends she knows things she doesn't, who pretends she's worldly when she's not. "You know what men are like," I chuckle, a sound so utterly forced that it hurts. "All macho around each other." "Can we have some space, please? You're like such a space invader," she calls over my shoulder, hopefully to my pain in the ass tracker. He retorts,
"You best not be up to anything."
Well, my girl is sad and shit. She doesn't need an audience for everything. You lot treat her like she isn't a grown-ass woman. She talks back into my hair loudly, saying, "It's okay, Fawn." Then she drops her voice. Why is Max upset? I promise to tell you everything after. Please, we have to go now. He might leave before I have a chance to talk to him properly. Okay, okay. She wraps her arm around my shoulders, poking her tongue out at HJ before steering me into the changing room. He doesn't follow us in. Jasmine goes to her locker. Quickly pulling her black hoodie out, she hands it to me. While I pull it on, she eyes me with skepticism. Your hair is very noticeable. I pull the hoodie up and tuck my blonde strands into the back and out of sight. I know. Are you going to get in trouble? I lie. I just want to talk to Max. Can I play with your cat? Sure. She half grins. Can I name her? No. I think about her white fur and multicolored eyes, her uncertain little manner. She isn't ready for a name just yet. Jasmine tilts her head questioningly, not at all understanding why the kitten that looks a little like me isn't ready to have a name, and I don't waste time leaving through the back door and navigating the staff quarters to get to the unused office, hoping Max is still fuming and eager to act. Checking the passages, I enter the room quickly and close us inside. I exhale hard. Hurriedly, I turn to Max, who has twisted in his seat, his stoic grey eyes landing on me. I take a big breath in and say, I'll go with you. Dark brows furrow, but he only returns his gaze to his whiskey, ignoring me completely. I frown, rounding the seat and table to stop in front of him. Did you hear me? I'll go to the campsite. We can meet them there, but we have to go now.
No,
is all I get from him. My pulse races. We have to go now while Clay is talking to Carter and Henchman Jeeves thinks I'm talking to Jasmine about how horrible this entire situation is. Nothing. He focuses on his untouched glass of whiskey. His jaw is set hard, his anger evident in the pulsing muscles beneath. Fucking hell, Max! We don't have time for this. You were right. You are right. We have to go because they will be searching for me soon and because I can't let Clay choose me. I hear my voice losing strength with each word. Because no one has ever seen me before, Max. No one has ever looked at me the way Clay looks at me. And if something happens to Xander... I catch my breath as he glares up from the glass to meet my gaze. No one ever will again. He'll be gone. He'll never forgive himself. You'll lose both your brothers. My heart shrinks. He is choosing wrong, Max. He should choose Xander. He stands, his body forcing me a step backwards purely by his presence, his heat hitting me even from this distance.
I'll keep you safe.
He assures, dead serious. Keep Xander safe. Swallowing around my nerves, I nod. I'll be fine. I always am. I survive.
Stay to my left.
He states, and we stride back through the staff quarters, hugging the walls and heading towards a different exit. I hang close to his left with my head cast low, trying to keep up. Pushing the staff exit open, he guides us forward. I pull the hoodie down my face. We walk across a gravel road and the small loose stones shuffle below my sandals. My eyes sting thinking about my pretty new sandals. I dart my gaze quickly up to see we're in the staff car parking lot, keeping my nervous gaze away from my sandals and all they symbolize. Then I hear the static of male voices and the scuffing of rushed, heavy-footed people. We start to jog. I follow Max. The sound of shoes beating the floor chases after us, closing in. My heart spikes. Panic sets in, and I almost slam into the bonnet of a red car when Max grabs my elbow, steering me in another direction. A gunshot blasts my ears, ripping a yelp from me, forcing me to duck and cower low. Did they just fire at us?
Fuck!
Max bites out, sweeping me in front of him, blocking the direction of the bullets with his form. He stoops with me, still in the sheltered cave of his body, hiding us by the side of the car. Another bullet sounds. They are firing at us. Gasping as a third round is fired, hitting something metal, the ting of sound like a jet flying past my ear, I try to calm myself down. Think straight. I squat lower, peering around the side of the vehicle's black metallic paint. Tears consume my eyes when I see Clay rip a weapon from the man firing at us. He's frantic as he slams the handle into the guard's face, barking,
"That's my brother!"
Then our eyes lock. His gloss over. Mine gape at the vulnerability. He calls out to me,
"Fawn!"
His voice reaches right inside me.
"Fawn!"
He shakes his head meaningfully, and my breath vibrates in my throat when I hear the strain in his timbre.
"Come to me, little dear. Walk to me now."
I can't. I sob once but suck it in. My whole body starts to quake violently under the restraint of those angry, wanting tears. I touch the pendant on my chest, pressing my palm to the meaningful gift. "Remember who I am." Clay's face twists in anguish, an expression that strips the calm, controlled mask away and reveals utter defenselessness to me. My heart thrashes. I want to go to him, to my everything, want to rush into his arms, the arms that held me while I bled, that rock me while I sleep, that protect, that defend, that love. His arms. But I don't. And it kills me. I defy him for the first time, splitting straight down the center, tears filtering out the seams of my existence. "I'll see you soon, sir. I'm resilient and brave. The blood of the Cosa Nostra. I can do this." Clay curses, spinning in anger, gripping his neck before turning back to aim the gun at the car. His deadly stare focused on something low, homed in like a predator to prey. My wolf. His deer. My soul wants to leap from my body to be held by his, comforted, coddled. I can feel his resolve melting away even from this distance, seeing the evil that lives so comfortable beneath his skin move to the surface. It doesn't change anything. I can't run to him when I know he'll never let me go. I can't go to him. "Don't cry, Fawn." "I have to do this. I will force myself to stay strong, defy him, break our bond, change everything. God, but a memory is better than the constant reminder he did. He actually chose me." I watch in horror as he points the gun in our direction, the pathetic, bruised remains of my heart like a bass between my ears, waiting.
"He doesn't miss,"
Max states as he jumps to his feet. Opening the car door, he lifts me up and ushers me across the driver's position to the passenger side. What is Clay aiming at? Without caring that we are in the line of Clay's weapon, Max starts the engine. He wouldn't shoot at his brother. Would he? One shot. A tire hisses. My body shakes. Max tears out of the parking lot, and now in the lonely, agonizing safety of his car, I sob hysterically. My chest is cavernous, my heart a shriveled, thrashing lump of flesh. I cup my face and bawl, the tears creating a pool against my palms. My mind's eye desperate to see him one last time, in case something happens, in case... The pull of Clay's gaze grapples me, so I twist in my seat and stare at him, still bracing the gun, still pointing it at the vehicle, still wanting me to come to him. I can't see his expression, but I can feel the second he breaks.
Chapter 23. Clay. Don't feel. Pain shoots through my fingers as they lose blood while I choke the handle of my Glock, my bones swelling beneath taut skin, the gun cracking under the pressure, and I lose sight of her. I lose sight of her. Aurora shouts from behind my back.
Follow that car! Keep an eye on them!
The sound of her heels approaching me is the last thing before everything goes deadly quiet. As though the air itself has crystallized around me. I lose focus. Losing her. She's gone. The gun shakes harder. That I can feel. The sight still pointed at the end of the driveway as cars flood out. That I can see. But no noise. There must be commotion, shouting, tires. I hear nothing. This is the last thing. This is the last thing. I will drag God himself to hell before I let you hurt again. I will protect you. I will choose you. You have to trust me. Don't feel. Rage like pure evil boils through my veins. Red-hot lava, burning up everything rational as it surges into my muscles, feeding them with volatile need. Need to hurt, need to fight. All the don't feel orders and lessons in remaining unreadable, in control, in being the wolf, the heir, the district mayor, the family man, the controlled man. I don't fucking care. I fucking snap. Growling as tears flood my eyes, their presence creeping dark pools of hatred across my vision, backing me into a corner of near volatility and vulnerability, and fuck! Someone touches my shoulder, and when I whirl around, they punch my wrist, knocking the gun from my grasp. I cut my fist through the air, throwing a faceless person backwards. There are soldiers all around me now, blurred shadows in my peripherals that want the calm Clay Butcher, the reliable one. He's not here. I don't fucking care. They let her leave. They had one damn job. I roar. You fuckers, let her out of your sight! I charge a body, jabbing quickly. Movement behind me jolts my attention. Ducking, I spin low and punch a solid wall of muscles 3 times until it falls away. Someone else grabs my arms to stop me, and I steal, straighten. Taller than the guard now wincing, I use my weight and drop my fist hard into his face. Another soldier at my flank attempts to lock my arms behind me, to control me. Who gave that order? I growl and fight back, hearing my anger in my head, but nothing fills my ears. The fuckers get a grip on me, 3 soldiers bracing my arms behind my back while others shift around in front of me. I can barely see them, the who not important. Bucking and gyrating as another body fights to restrain me, I tense, flex my muscles, and throw the fuckers forward. They fall into a pile ahead of me. I'm a fucking animal right now. Bare teeth, deaf, blind, rage. Suddenly, pitch black coats my irises, and I fall forward on my knees, a hard knock to the back of my head stealing the strength and sight from me. I shake the hazy dark from my vision,
slowly regaining a grainy view of the parking lot. Growling at the gravel, I try to push up with my hands, but I'm kicked in the side, the boot of someone throwing me over. I'll kill them. I roll onto my back as fuckers circle me, and one face comes into view. I should have known. Only one man can control his fist. The meticulous placement, the precision of pressure, the exact amount of both needed to render a man immobile. Luca Butcher. Come, son. My father drops to his haunches, blood spilling from his nose. Compliments of me, I presume. That'll do. He grips my shoulder as I regain my senses, hearing the calamity of my men hit me square in the forehead, hearing Aurora shouting orders, the cars leaving, the parking lot emptying. My father is still gripping my shoulder, and I'm certain he has never held me for such a time. And he is staring at me again with that uncomfortable intent, with regret and empathy. I frown at him. What does that look mean to me? It reminds me of an 18-year-old boy after his first kill, after murdering a young girl, of being rejected such empathy. It retells a moment of need, of wanting such understanding. Don't feel you're a leader. A leader is always alone. Perhaps he never said that. It was teachings from the Cosa Nostra. It was my mother. And it was my old Don. It was Jimmy Storm. And I made his words synonymous with my father's, but they never were they? Jimmy encouraged the segregation. And I hid in it. Christ. I squeezed my eyes shut to the sensation of his fist gripping my shoulder. I've lost my mind. My absolute control, my logic, rationalities utterly warring with my emotions. Max, I hiss through my teeth. He will keep her safe, son. Seeing only red in my mind, I open my eyes to find Bronson has moved in beside my father, a look of both volatility and pride firing within his glowing green gaze. Well, well, he almost sings. There you are, my beautiful brother, and what a sight for sore eyes you are. We have to find them, I say darkly. We don't have time to chase them around the city, brother. So get up, wipe your pretty suit off, and let's go get our brothers and our girl at the campsite. Chapter 24. Clay. I fist the wheel. We go ahead with the plan. Bronson is with Carter somewhere in the thick, dense bush. Aurora waits at home with Luca and the men, ready to initiate a recovery operation should we not come back tonight. And I drive alone. Thick grey smoke rolls along the bonnet, icing the dark metallic sheets in white and brown soot. As I drive through the debris of the bushfire, to her, and I'm feeling so fucking much. It's dangerous, distracting. Blackened trees border the road. The National Park fire is a 360-degree glow of orange. The heat is immense, contracting the metal of my Chrysler. The fibers shrinking within this woodland furnace. I head further into its depths, towards more scorching intensity. Ahead, I can only make out mere meters. Cracks rattle my bones as branches snap in half in the vast distance. This is red, hot, earthly hell. I roll down a dirt track, steering towards the meeting site. My mind drifts to the text message I received 30 minutes ago as I geared up. It read, "We will be there. I will keep her safe. You have my word, brother." She's out in this heat too, without me. But a leader is always alone, and I have never felt lonelier in my own presence than I do in her absence. Christ! I'll die before I let anyone take her from me. I'll crumble the world around her body. The corridor of charred trees is narrower now. Black limbs reaching over the track, the higher ones disappearing.